Well, it's a pleasure to be here at PI, one of the meccas for theoretical physics. And yeah, so since Benny couldn't ever correct the title, maybe you guys can. But you probably play this little game here called Hangman. We have to guess the letters that are missing in a word. Just give you the spaces. So do you have any guesses? It's probably.
Do we get any guesses left? It looks like we lost.
Yeah. Well, I can cut the rope. It's like cut the rope. If you don't make any mistakes, then I can cut the rope. So this is, let's find the O's. My phone? Because it goes up.
You can say goodbye to your phone.
And I can put the A's. And you have the title. But what's the point of playing this little game? Well, the point is that the way we communicate, it already has redundancy built into it. You expect that these words are going to be words in the English language. You expect that this is going to be a meaningful title. So you have a prior on what this message will be. So then I don't need to put it on top of some extra fancy code. It's already in a code. And it's in a code that does, in a way, does compression and channel coding at the same time. So first of all, let me try to define these two words, which some people say it's an unlucky title or unlucky name for what these things are, but it's what it is. So what is source coding? So in source coding, what you have is you have some distribution over states. Let's say you have some measure mu of psi over your states psi, which these can be quantum states, classical states. And what you try to do is try to pack them up in as small a space as possible. Sort of in general, the setting that people play is you have n copies that you want to put in, and you'll apply some process. This is, we'll call it source coding. This is for source, or also in quantum mechanics called Schumacher compression. And here you'll try to produce a new state. Let's call it the compressed version of the state. And in the rest of the if this was some unitary in the rest of the registers, you'd get some trash register, so some garbage. Which actually, if you did your coding according to some distribution, what this unitary is actually performing is also algorithmic cooling. So what it's doing is here in this register, it's putting all of the information that you the most possible amount of information that you had here, and here you're approximately, let's say we can say that this is approximately the zero state to some power, right? And how much can we compress? Well, this is the problem that has been analyzed by Shannon in the classical information setting. Let's suppose that we had
sorry, Fernando, is the zero state meaning it's always the same state? It doesn't depend on the input, it doesn't have any information about the input, so it's always the same?
Well, in the ideal case, it doesn't have any information about the input. If it doesn't have any information about the input and this was a pure state, then you can unitarily move it into the zero state. That's what I'm saying. So if you have some state that comes from some distribution x, the amount of bits that you need, or later will be qubits, will be n times log of the dimension of whatever distribution you had. But if this distribution is not uniform, then after doing compression, what you get is n times Shannon entropy of H, right? So you can, if you have n copies, this Shannon source coding theorem tells you that you can, with very little error actually, encode into this this amount of bits. This is, but now, I mean, let's be clear, this is with very little error. In order for this to be a fixed state, I really need to only be using a Hilbert space of this dimension. But in fact, with certain possibly low probability, you are using things which are outside of, which are in this big Hilbert space, but not in the smallest one that you reduced to. OK, so now we have source coding.
Why is this cooling?
Why is this cooling? Well, one of the problems in quantum computation is you want to get good fresh ancillas. And fresh ancillas, you can think of them as cold registers. And maybe this unitary, what it does is it performs a different task, which is if you have ancillas which are not perfect, or they're close to one but not one, it produces here ancillas which are really close to one. So this is this why it's also Schumacher compression, but also so this unitary is also false. OK, so now what is channel coding? So in channel coding, I have the converse, a different problem. So I have a channel, let's call it N for noise, which is noisy. And I want to use many copies of this channel in order to perform reliable communication. So what do I do? I won't, let's say I had, again, n copies of the channel. I won't be able to really transmit n pieces of information reliably because this channel is noisy. It sometimes drops packets or it sometimes flips a bit. But what I do is I'll perform some encoding of a certain number of bits. So let's say k bits or k units. And I'll input some state. Let's call it 0 to the n minus k. And I'll feed this, after the encoding, I'll feed this into my channels. After the noise occurs, I'll do some decoding. And I'll get, ideally, back my k qubits. And some trash. So these I will throw away. And how many qubits can I put in here? Well, the name of this question is actually the calculating the channel capacity. So if you go to a limit of large n and you have many copies of the same channel, that's the number of registers that you can put in is essentially the channel capacity. But usually these two things are considered separately. Why? Well, because we know that this is the Shannon separation theorem, that as we have a large number of copies of the source distribution and as we have a large number of copies of the channel, what we can do is we can actually first compress, then have the compressed version of the data and have it go through the channel. And this is going to be optimal. This is going to achieve this capacity in terms of the entropy of the distribution. And this is going to achieve the channel capacity in terms of what the channel has. But what if I don't have infinitely many IID copies? Or what if my registers that I want to communicate have a lot of non-trivial correlation? That's non-IID. Well, then I can try to compress, but compression is an approximate process. And here I won't get exactly the zero state. But it would be a waste to throw away this approximate zero state. So what we can think of doing is let's see, the encoding process usually for if you try to represent an NK, so this is the kind of letters that quantum information theorists try to use, tend to use to represent the code, which is essentially you have K inputs that you care about. You have N minus K ancillas, and you use this in a code of distance D, but the point is that if I'm really doing this code and I'm doing subspace encoding, I can do this with a unitary operation that actually takes my ancillas in and produces some entangled state among all N registers. So here I have this like the encoded state on N registers. But now what I will propose that to do is essentially merge these two things. So we had the source coding. Or channel coding. So I had these lines that were being refreshed, they were being cooled and being thrown away. And here I needed some ancilla input, so why not just connect it straight away and hope for the best. Well, I won't be...
Sorry, I missed, what is the goal? What are you trying to accomplish?
What are we trying to accomplish? I'm trying to communicate this state as best as possible, given that I will have some noise channel after preparing my state.
And how is this mixing both source coding and channel coding? And I thought channel coding was defined for this task.
Channel coding was defined for this task. Let's say in general, in channel coding, you can use more copies of the channel than you have input registers. But let's say that I don't allow you this. I mean, let's say that the number of characters that I allow you to transmit is equal to the length of my message. I mean, here you could still reconstruct the message, even though I didn't allow for extra characters to provide redundancy. Why is that? Why could we reconstruct the message here? It's because you had an expectation that certain configurations of letters were unlikely. So if you have, already having a subset of these letters, you know that with overwhelming probability, these guys will be A's, this will be O's, and so on.
I understood the title, promise. So I understood the example that you gave with the title. I don't see how this illustrates. So you're saying that instead of the general problem of channel coding, you are analyzing a specialized or a particular case where k is equal to the number of users of the channel?
Well, actually, I want to depart from this. I want to say I will give you a state once which has correlation, so it's no longer IID, so I can't use even this anymore. But I have some expectation on the state. It's like, okay, my state belongs to the set of words in the English language. And then the encoding, what I will try to do is try to do unitary encoding. Essentially, massage it, rotate the Hilbert space such that your distribution, which will have exactly the same spectrum if you want, or it will be the same distribution just in a different basis, but now, because it's in a different basis, it might be more robust to these kind of errors. So essentially what I'm saying is that, I want to do just one big unitary, which I'll call search channel. And in principle, I could have mixed these two steps in different ways. I mean, I don't need to, I mean, if I'm doing one shot, the source and I want to do source coding and channel coding on one piece of the data, then it's not necessary that, say, the number of ancillas that I put here be the same as the number of registers that I cooled. So it could be, in principle, that I have different sizes of the Hilbert space here. So if I had a smaller Hilbert space here, it would be more like compression. If I had a larger Hilbert space here, it would be more like channel coding, like error correction. But
I just want to make sure I understand. So originally, Psylum, Psyglue, and so on were just unentangled states, and they are not correlated with each other.
Well, that's the setting that
people. But now you assume that they are still tensor products, but sort of they have some correlations. You ideally want to compress it and then do the channel, but you want to do it in one unit.
So initially in the setting of source coding, like when they look at n copies, and in order to prove this theorem, they assume that they all come, they're all taken from the same distribution. So it's essentially in a tensor product. But in our case, what we will think of is that we have some big state psi, which is on the whole Hilbert space. It also comes from some joint distribution, but it's comes from some joint distribution that does have possibly correlations.
So how bad
not
is it?
Factorizable.
How much will we miss from what comes next? If we just take the setting that you want to analyze, and we say, let's find, you are looking for a unitary called use source channel, which will optimally transform the original state into something that when you use this noisy channel, you won't lose information. Is that what you want?
So in the end, what I will say is that what I want to look at is a way to analyze whether this, whether my channel is, whether my distribution is well protected from erasures, and then, yeah, and then, sort of, if you analyze it for a specific distribution, then any other distribution which is unitarily mappable to that, you can do that. So, So what property will we want to ask? Well, I want to say that if, so I will use some unitary encoding, and I want that if the noise equals identity, then then the decoding map will simply be the inverse unitary. So I rotate my space into a specific basis where it's protected, but let's suppose that I have heralded noise in the sense that if no noise happens, then I know that everything is fine. But if some noise happens, I know that I need to do something. So if everything is fine, I can just undo the unitary and recover the information. So that means that this procedure will be, since I'm keeping the same dimension of the Hilbert space, this will be lossless in the case of no noise. And this is already a requirement. But in general, what I will think about is I will think about some encoding, some noise process. Now, might be on single particle or multiple particles, and some decoding. And in fact, what I would, since I'm imposing that that this encoding be unitary, the only thing I need to keep track of is the spectrum of the distribution. So the distribution. So I know what this unitary will be doing. It will be essentially ordering the eigenvalues in the distribution such that the ones that don't have zero in this part have a very low weight, and this is something that I can just look from the density matrix.
Sorry, Fernando, this E is the same as U?
This E.
This encoder.
Yes.
It's the same as you.
So yeah, this is.
Source code. Source channel. Okay.
So yeah, this is somehow the general picture. But now, if I have this to be a unitary, then if this is a unitary and this noise is identity, then I'm just undoing the unitary. But in general, I will need to do some non-trivial recovery here. So I can, let's say, since this is unitarily invariant, I can I can undo whatever unitary I did in the beginning here. I can compensate it at the end. And this will give me the same result. So how do I benchmark if I'm doing a good job with this kind of channel? Let me change notation. Let's call it, let's say, unitary encoding. So let's suppose I actually call this whole thing is my channel. So how can I benchmark if I'm recovering the information well? Well, one measure to look at is actually looking at the fidelity. So if I input some state through this, I apply this unitary and then the noise and then the decoding to the state. This is what I will call the channel E. This tells me how well I'm preserving a specific state. It's just the square of the fidelity what I have. But this is only for a specific state. The setting I'm interested in is when I have some measure over the set of states. And what I will also define will be useful is I will call the state rho so the same density matrix I can obtain by combining it in different ways as a mixture over states. So this maybe if you prefer you can think of this as a probability distribution. Pi. This is the integral version. So I prepare different states with different probabilities, and I want this fidelity to be high no matter what. But since I'm doing source coding, the adequate benchmark is not no matter what, it's on average. Because now I'm mixing. I have these very strange, very rare states that might also come into my unitary, but for those I might not be able to properly error correct. Just like for these very rare states, if you really just truncate this part of the Hilbert space, your compression will fail. So compression for any finite size, it's not something that you can do deterministically. So in this sense, what we will look at is not at this very harsh benchmark that error correction has, which is worst case fidelity sometimes, or diamond norm. But we'll look at an average case fidelity. So what we can do is essentially take this quantity and average it. Don't ask me why, but it no longer has the square symbol. I have some measure of the set of states. Or similarly with a weighted sum, weighted average. Okay, so this is a somewhat natural benchmark, but there's actually another benchmark which is a bit more strict. Which is called the entanglement fidelity, subindex E. F bar is like Reni 2 entropy. For the identity. Yeah, for the identity channel.
No.
Chomsky. Well, F bar actually depends on your measure here. So maybe you're thinking of, so a very common measure to use here is the uniform measure of over pure states. So that's how random. We're considering. Well, rho does not determine F bar by itself. And let me give you an example. So suppose that rho is some diagonal matrix in the computational basis. Now, I take mu to be a distribution over diagonal state. So I, with some probability, I prepare one eigenstate with another probability, I prepare another eigenstate. And now I take this channel E to be the measurement in the computational basis, or defacing. So now this channel, it's not doing anything. I mean, no matter what state I prepared, it was a state in a computational basis. I measure it in that basis, it stays the same. I overlap, I get one. Perfect. However, if I could have obtained the same rho, let's say it's a thermal state, by a combination of states that have superpositions of different computational basis states, right? So let's say rho equals identity over 2. So I could have prepared, let's say with probability, I could have prepared 0 or 1 with probability 1/2, or I could have prepared plus and minus with probability 1/2. And I would have had the same rho, it's a different distribution. But now if E is doing measurement in the computational basis, it will distinguish these two distributions. For one, it will give you an average fidelity of 1. For the other, it will give you an average fidelity of 1/2. So quite different. Mu might be the right thing to do if we have actually access to the microscopic distribution of over states. But we want to look at something simple, something like rho, right? And it would be nice if we could do that. So what we can do is we can look at the entanglement fidelity of rho with respect to this channel. And what this does, how this is defined, is just the square fidelity over one specific state, let's call it by rho, a pure state, which is a purification of my state rho in some subsystem A, some ancillary subsystem. And okay, so the condition is, so this guy here is called entanglement fidelity. That one was average fidelity. And this is with condition. Let's call it trace over A. So I wanted that if I trace out my ancillary system where I purify rho, I get back rho. And okay, so you might say, why is this harsher? Well, it's been proven that if I, okay, so maybe something strange here is that here on the left, you have row and the channel, and here you have a purification. And in principle, you have some freedom over what purification to choose, how to choose this purification. But it turns out that this quantity doesn't depend on how you choose that, so everything is fine.
I see. This is mu safe, this measure. So suppose you're in a 1 cubic Dilbert space.
Mm-hmm.
You could have mu on the 0, mu on the 1,
mm-hmm.
and also a non-zero mu on 0 plus 1, right?
Yes, so this mu could be some integral, for example.
Yeah,
and right. And one possible integral that is used a lot, for example, if mu is a hard measure, then this thing here is called average fidelity. And so the hard measure is a unitarily invariant measure over the Hilbert space that you're treating. And this is a very important one. This one actually connects.
My worry is that this row is really weird, right? It's not.
Row is very weird.
Yeah, because usually you expect something like that with the, whereas you expect to sum over the second equation you wrote, pi psi I psi. You expect psi I to be orthogonal vectors or something like that.
No. This is a good point. The psi I don't need to be orthogonal vectors.
Yeah.
So this is a. And this is why, this is one of the reasons why this distribution actually carries much more information than the density matrix itself. Nevertheless, so first let me give an example of what this purification will be, which I guess there are some physicists in the audience. So suppose that rho beta is a thermal state, so E L M minus beta H. So one possible purification is to take the so-called thermophile double state, which is just one possible choice among many. Let's say I have J is a basis of eigenvalues for this Hamiltonian, with each one with energy Ej. Then this state called, this is sometimes called thermophile double, is one possible purification of the thermal state. And this will come back to us later.
So all you're saying is basically you're not considering rho, but you're just thinking also about second moment of rho.
The ensemble, right?
Sure. Well, ideally, I would like to treat the ensemble.
Yeah.
But there's an inequality that tells me that I don't need to. Essentially, if I look at the entanglement fidelity of rho, the second moments of rho, and I take this entanglement fidelity for this channel, this is actually smaller or equal than the average fidelity for the measure mu with respect to the same channel. So essentially, this is telling me that this entanglement fidelity is a much harsher, harsher than any distribution that I have. So if this thing is close to 1, so let's say that this is greater or equal than 1 plus epsilon, then that will also be close to 1. Because, I mean, all these fidelities, I didn't mention this, but they are always upper bounded by 1. If I get 1, then everything is perfect. And I think I missed the square root of the partition function here. Exactly. The entanglement fidelity got rid of all this dependence on this.
So can you write explicitly as a function of rho, or a trace of rho, something? Can you write explicitly? But this implies some purification.
Implies some purification.
Freedom and purification. I mean, there should be an expression which is explicit just in terms of rho. No?
There has to be, because it becomes independent of the purification.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe you need to play this Troy Jamielkowski kind of trick, or you know. Do you know Benny? Okay. So probably there is an sort of a more explicit formula, but not right now.
No, oh. I think in your paper there is a formula.
Yeah. So we no. I wanted to go to that, but it's not a general formula for rho. But let's say suppose that rho is equal to 1 over some dimension of some Hilbert space, right? So let's suppose that rho is uniform over some Hilbert space, and that mu. Okay, so I think that's all I need. Then I have it here. Or then they're actually pretty close.
But if rho is 1, it's trivial, isn't it?
If rho is 1, well, this is actually, I wouldn't say it's trivial. This is the content of this Nielsen paper over there, which connected the, and suppose that mu is actually the Haar measure, so it's uniform over the whole Hilbert space. Then, okay, let me see if I can let's be smaller.
No, maybe mu is not, but rho is
there. If mu is Haar, then I can really just get rid of the mu. This is what people usually call average fidelities. When they call average fidelity, they are actually assuming this. And this average fidelity is actually equal to entanglement fidelity of the channel. And also, again, it's assumed that the matrix is the maximum mixed matrix, plus some correction, which is one, which is positive. So this is to say that if the dimension, if I'm taking a flat prior or a flat distribution, uniform distribution over a Hilbert space of high dimension, then this entanglement fidelity is only a little bit smaller than this average fidelity, because here I have a term which is between 0 and 1, so this is the numerator, and the denominator has the dimension of the Hilbert space dividing. So if I have a uniform distribution, these two things are very close, which is sort of the least that I could assume. Okay, so now I started wanting to give a lower bound to get a good statement for this weighted fidelity, but I don't even know my prior, know what this distribution is. But this I might have an easier time getting a handle on, and I might be able to actually bound that term, the entanglement fidelity. And maybe. And for that, there are very quite recent tools that have been developed in quantum information and quantum Shannon theory, which are called the Markov condition. So what these results tell me is they will give me an entropic condition under which I can complete that map. I can find the decoder, called a recovery map, such that I can get a very high fidelity. And let me write the statement. But there's this conditional mutual information. So A, we should think of again as this purification. And this in turn, okay, so this is greater or equal than zero. So let's try to parse this a bit. So what, first of all, what is this quantity here on the right? So this is called the conditional mutual information. It's the mutual information between A and C conditioned on B. And how do I spell it out? Well, so, okay, let's stare at this for a second. This expression is symmetric in A and C, even though later on the left, it's not symmetric. This is a bit counterintuitive, but that's the way it is. So if I substitute here in this expression left and right, if I swap A and C, I get the same expression. And What is it? This result. So this is the final statement from a series of results, which are called these recovery maps. So 3, 4, and 5 over there. And it tells me that if I look at this quantity and I have some noise map. So now let's say that N is a noise map occurring on C. Then I can actually construct some recovery map, which will depend on my, so these are entropies of the reduced density matrix. My recovery map will depend on those entropies such that the fidelity, so here I'll have the state on ABC, and here I will do nothing on A. Here, this recovery map is actually throwing away C. It's assuming the worst in C. It's assuming that it's garbage. So I just take B, and from B I try to reconstruct BC. But not just BC with all of its entanglement with A, without touching A. So that's why, let's say one observation is that this RPBC, this depends on rho. Or let's say rho ABC in principle. But even though it depends on rho, this problem is not trivial, because I need to reconstruct all the entanglements that I had with A without touching A. It's like I have two parts of an EPR pair. I give U1 and you have some noise. I mean, you encode it, you have some noise. Then you want to reconstruct. It's not trivial to reconstruct all the entanglement with A. But what this result says is that you just need to look at this entropic quantity. And if this is small, then this is small. But if log of a fidelity is small, that means that the fidelity is actually really close to 1. So
this fidelity, is it one of the three that you've introduced before?
It's the first one that I've introduced. So I could have.
Oh, that was really squared.
Really squared. Yeah, this is how it was in some other people.
I assume C is the region where I apply business, or erasure.
Right, so now I will interpret this result. How will I interpret it? I will interpret C as the region where I apply noise, B as the region that I want to use in order to correct this noise, which could be the rest of my physical system, so the rest of the system I could have access to, and A is the ancillary purifying system. Okay, but let's say if rho ABC is pure, then what happens? Then I get the what does this go to? Well, now I try to get rid of A in every term. SAB becomes SC. SBC stays the same. SABC is zero because ABC is pure, and SB stays the same. Good. Because it's pure, I can get rid of this artificial, this mathematical trick, which is A. And the only thing that I need to look at is entropies in my physical system where actually my original distribution mu lived, right? Mu is living on DC. And I will be thinking that I recover I want to recover C from B. Furthermore, if rho ABC is known to be pure, then also it only depends on the rho BC part. It doesn't depend on the purification, which is good because the purification is something that I could have chosen arbitrarily as I want. Okay, so now the first step I can do is I can linearize this inequality here. And what I get is that I linearize the inequality that I had there, and I get the inequality here. So 1 minus this conditional mutual information is smaller or equal than this squared fidelity. But now this squared fidelity is nothing but, this is by definition, the entanglement fidelity of rho BC. And RBBC, I can think of it as I had some noise acting on C, and then I apply this channel. Because since this map is not looking at C, it doesn't matter what noise I put before. OK, great. And yeah, let's just, so this is all if. And this term there, I have 1 minus. And by the way, there's a parenthesis missing in the paper with respect to that term. So, too bad. So essentially, we had this bound that this term here was smaller or equal than this average fidelity with respect to measure mu. So essentially, if I just look at these entropies, which are entropies of reduced states for rho, I can guarantee that I give you that for any resolution of this density matrix or any distribution of states that gives rise to rho, I will have a good average fidelity. Okay, so now the quantum information part of the story is over, but the towards holography part begins. And now we want to look at systems where this quantity is small. And we'll get those systems from holography. So there's certain systems that satisfy what is called the holographic area law. So suppose I have a chain of spins on the line. If this is a CFT, then people from holography would say, oh, this is equivalent to a space in a with a hyperbolic space. It has a hyperbolic dual. What does that mean? That means that the dual space actually sort of geodesics look like this. And these are minimum surfaces, or geodesics. And this also the statement is that the length of these curves is equal to the, let's say I have some region C. So this is the length of this minimum surface in this hyperbolic space. And the entropy, according to holography, is, let's say that there might be some corrections, but it's equal to the length of this minimum surface. And now I can try to find settings where this quantity is small. And what does this mean that this quantity is small? I want these terms actually to cancel. So one example would be if I take this C very small, then the minimum surface will look like this. If I take B, composed of B1 and B2, then I can have two possible minimal surfaces. One is the sum of these two things, and the other is actually the sum. Maybe it's a good time to use some color. So two potential candidates for B are, one is that the entropy looks like this, or the minimal surface looks like the sum of these two things. And the other is that, so minimal surfaces are now things that separate B from the complement inside this additional space. So here, I don't know, there's some emergent space here. And I'm assuming that this is, these are minimal surfaces. This is what would happen for a CFT. And indeed, for a CFT,
why are you considering this particular geometry, like C inside of B?
C inside of B? Okay, so why this particular geometry? Well, if this green surface is actually the minimal surface, then what does this predict? This predicts that the S of B will actually be equal to the entropy of C plus SBC. So it's the whole interval. So this is exactly the quantity that the equation that I want to hold in order for this term to be zero. So this gives me a good guiding principle of where when I can expect these terms to be small. Right?
This is only very large central charge.
This is actually for single intervals, it's valid even for
the non-trivial regime.
The non-trivial regime.
Very large central charge.
True. So in fact, in this kind of setting where the emergent geometry is hyperbolic, what I have is that when I double the size of a region, what I get is the previous entropy plus or let's say if I, so this is when I double the size of a region, and say, here's, I'm putting the size and not where it's located, then this is how much it increases. And this here tells me when, like if I take these two guys sufficiently large compared to this one, then I will be able to locally error correct this thing.
Is that like the only kind of geometry that makes this saturated? Or is that just an example?
Is this hyperbolic geometry the only one that...
I mean, just the way that the region C is related to the region B1 or B2. So this is an example of a way to arrange these intervals such that you get a zero up there, but are
right.
There other ways?
Yeah, there should be other examples. And
but this expression does not require holography, so which part?
This expression does not require holography.
Right, so which part does require holography?
Well, that requires holography, right? B1, B2 are separated.
No, the drawings may require holography.
The drawings require holography. That's the only part that requires holography.
No, the expression does not. So
the expression does not, and I won't...
We just don't know what S, B is in general. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know how to...
In general, it's a very complicated expression.
It's a very complicated expression.
Only in holography we know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or
yes, and I mean, even in holography there are correction terms, but at least you want this holographic and the contribution to the entropy to cancel in order to get something small here. In fact, the theory that I will analyze is not a holographic theory. So I take this as inspiration, but then we'll analyze the Ising model.
So the two intervals for free theories is also normal, right? For free fermions, the entropy of two intervals, double interval for free fermions is also normal.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I mean, every other case is very complicated. But free fermions is uniquely simple.
Free fermions and then
hollow. So, yeah, maybe I should talk to you guys later because, I wasn't aware of any calculation that goes to the extent of saying, okay, this quantity actually cancels up to terms of order one. Because here, if I have cancellations in leading terms, but I still have something which is order one, I'm still screwed because I'm trying to give a lower bound on a fidelity, right? I'm not aware of calculations that actually do this up to terms of order one, even in free fermions.
For free fermions, is it additive? So that would not be a cancellation.
Okay, so am I running out of words?
There is a calculation by Cassini and others, free bosons.
So, now what I will look at is something that actually has this kind of geometry. So, or I will look just a transverse field. This is a CFT, and this is admittedly not holographic, or if it's holographic, it has, it's very quantum. And the Hamiltonian for this transverse field is actually very simple. So if you write it in terms of spins, and it commutes with a certain parity operator, let's call it P, which will appear later. Now, this Hamiltonian, I can also do a Jordan-Bigner transformation, and within the different parity sectors, so P be even. So it has two sectors, and within each sector, I can turn it into a Majorana Hamiltonian. Or
in this picture, basically, you can lose C and you can reconstruct B and C by looking at B. There's purifying part A is the rest of the system, which is like you encode this information about A and compress it, and then that's distributed. And then sort of encode it. Is that ideal?
Later. So if I look at this Hamiltonian and do this Jordan-Wigner transformation, so this is called transverse field Ising, and here in principle I could have put different coefficients accompanying these terms, but if I put the same, the model becomes critical, so it's at a phase transition, and there it acquires an additional symmetry if one writes it in terms of Majorana fermions. So each spin I can write in terms of two Majorana fermions, right? And then it acquires, let's say, an additional symmetry. And depending on the parity of the global state, the final term of the Hamiltonian, so the one that loops around, let's say, will have either a plus sign or a minus sign, depending on which parity sector I'm sitting. So this guy is a CFT. It's not expected to have a gravity dual. But we can do the calculation of these things. And honestly, the first time that we tried to do these calculations, the first time that we looked at this is, this is a free fermion model, so we can do calculations up to very high values of n. And this allows for, using the quadratic formalism, this allows a polynomial computation of expectation values, of quadratic operators, and also entropies in reduced density matrices in terms of the number of modes. However, what we found is that if we just look at the term at this model, we didn't get the kind of protection that we wanted. So what is the kind of problem that we will be looking at? So,
can I just ask a question? So when you calculate entanglement of the B for a region which is disconnected, I thought there was a difference between the Ising model, like the spin, and the free fermion model, because they are not local with respect to each other. So is there
No. But you could just start, instead of saying, let's look at transverse Ising model, you can say, let's look at Majorana.
Okay, just look at free Majorana, forget about Ising.
It's an example, right?
Okay, so the issue with Majorana is that it's better connected to a field theory, but the Hilbert space is not a tensor product Hilbert space. So I would need to apply more fancy formulas. I mean, I don't have a factorizable system.
You mean for this odd even?
For this thing. Let's say when I think of tracing out a region, what does this mean in terms of the Majorana? It's not really keeping the rest of it.
But if you try to compute the reduced density matrix for two intervals for the Ising model, you won't be able to use the correlation function for. So there is no efficient way of doing that anymore.
Right.
I think. I mean, is it
we're not using an efficient way of calculating, which is a shame. So let's go back to the information I wanted to encode. I wanted to encode information in some distribution. And this distribution, the only thing that The only thing that I will look at in the end is this density matrix, that this ensemble distribution. So what is the amount of information that I'm communicating in this, or the amount of entanglement, maybe it's better, that I can keep if I can reconstruct this distribution, if I can get a low entanglement fidelity? Well, it's actually the entropy of the state. So that was when if I would have been thinking of multiple copies, it would be the entropy of the whole row. So in holography, the entropy of a thermal, if I think of this, my row to be a thermal state of a Hamiltonian, and in this case it's the CFT Hamiltonian, the entropy of that thermal state corresponds to the area of the corresponding black hole in the holographic dual. In this case, this is the length of this blue line here in the middle. So in this setting, let's say BC would be the CFT would be living on BC, so that's the top part over there. And because there's some information that I don't have about the state, it comes from this distribution, I interpret that as a black hole with area equals to the entropy of rho, right? I could have added an additional sort of fictitious system and say, oh, I have a thermal field double and I have some entanglement between my B and my fictitious system A. But truth is, I won't be able to probe past this blue line. And now what does this holographic entanglement entropy or this RT tell us? Well, it tells us if I delete some region C, which is sufficiently small, then its entropy will be equal to the length, will be proportional to the length of this dashed line, right? So then I can check this condition, this term here, whether it's small, this SC plus SBC plus SB. Now, SBC will be the area, the length of the blue line, SC will be the length of this red dashed line, and SB will be the length of, the sum of the length of both this dashed line plus this blue line. So in this case, this term will be, the holographic contribution to this term will be equal to zero.
When you say the holographic contribution, you mean to a living order?
I don't know what I mean.
Okay.
You mean a very large central charge, I think. So if you have a theory which is
sublating corrections, and is this sublating correction to order one, you cannot use this inequality anymore. You said that before.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you stated the problem, but is...
So I'm actually using this as a motivation to see, okay, where do we want to go look at in order to apply these tools. So for sure, I would want this geometric contribution to cancel out. If it doesn't cancel out, then I'm in trouble. But that doesn't mean that I will not be in trouble if the geometric contributions cancel out. But I will check this.
Okay, so you say the leading order cancels out, that's good.
That's good.
And now you're gonna look at the sublitics.
And now I'm going to do a numerical simulation of the Ising model. But yeah, I mean, this is motivation for people who do holography to do these calculations to the point where you can say, oh, this is smaller than one. But yeah, this might
but
be...
But the order one does not satisfy its condition. I mean, there's no reason why you should.
Oh, so just to clarify, if I understand, so the next leading order correction is order one in entropy. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so, however, if I take C sufficiently large and look at this geometric configuration, then the minimal surface for C will have this term plus the contour of the black hole horizon. So in this case, even the geometric part will not.
So that's your point. You can even point out that there are situations where not even
geometrically, it's expected.
Sorry, can you say what's the channel?
What's the channel?
The channel acting on?
Well, in this case, what I will think of as the channel is the erasure of some subsystem B. Or if you want, you can consider, if you want more generally, you can consider that there's a channel that erases part of your data, but tells you where the data was erased, or tells you where the noise occurred.
So
and you learn that it's either in C or in yeah.
So, What applied to this particular problem, this general formalism that you've been describing, is saying if I have a thermal state of a CFT,
mm-hmm.
and I lose part of the CFT or
mm-hmm.
space,
mm-hmm.
do I still have the original thermal state to some approximation?
Yeah, can I still recover it? Maybe the best way to think of it is I had a purification, say a thermofield double, and I lose part of it. Can I still reconstruct all the entanglement that was present in that thermofield double?
All the entanglement.
Can I still reconstruct the thermofield double state that
so
I?
So the wave function.
Mm-hmm, the wave function. Even having access just to B.
And the last drawing is telling you if C is large enough, you cannot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this drawing is telling you if C is large enough, you can't.
And the middle one is saying maybe. Because the geometrical...
Yeah, the middle one is saying, you know, okay, geometrically, yes, but go check it.
All right.
Yeah, and sort of my question is, what else does this depend on? And this has to do with this entanglement wedge reconstruction hypothesis. So it said that in holography, you can reconstruct up to... So you take a region V, for example, you look up to... You take the minimal surface separating this B from the complement part of the boundary. In this case, it would be C and maybe also A. And you take the minimal surface separating the two, and holographic predictions tell you, okay, you can reconstruct bulk operators up to this green region. Here it's everything minus this thing in red, and here it's just this wedge. But now what I'm thinking of is, I'm thinking of this some distribution mu, which lives maybe in, yeah, some distribution mu, and the entropy of this distribution is given by the length of this blue line. But there is really no proper subspace that is defining that distribution. So there's no code space in the sense of traditional quantum error correcting codes. And this is why we had to go to this whole story of source channel coding, because a thermal state on B is not, strictly speaking, a subspace. It has support on the whole Hilbert space if I take a lattice model. So I needed something different, something to exploit that there are certain states that are unlikely to happen and still be able to make sense of this error correction. Okay, so now my computer froze. Okay, so now we said we have to calculate the Markov quantity, but let's say we want to have a constant amount of entanglement entropy. And we are taking this Hamiltonian, which had terms all of constant strength. Then in order to keep this entanglement entropy constant, what one needs to do is scale up the temperature. In particular, one needs to take this beta proportional to n, the number of spins on your lattice, or the number of half the number of Majoranas. And well, why this beta n? Well, it's the only piece that I have left. In principle, this model will have some dispersion function. So let's say some dispersion relation. So each mode will have an energy. Yeah, I don't know what the maximum energy is, but the free fermion model was diagonalizable. So each mode will have an energy in this dispersion relationship. And if I put a certain number of modes, then they might be distributed like this. And if I look at some temperature, let's say this is 1 over beta, then only the modes that have energy smaller than 1 over beta are thermally active, and those will contribute to my entropy. But if I make n larger, then I have more modes, so I'm filling up this curve. And if I want to keep the area of this black hole fixed in units of entropy, what I need to do is I need to lower the temperature, or I need to increase beta. So this is why I'm saying if I want to keep the thermal entropy a approximately fixed. So what I need to do is I need to scale beta proportional to n. If I want to have increasing thermal entropy, I will have betas either scale with some polynomial between 0 and 1. 0 will not give me good protection. 1 will give me a constant thermal entropy. OK, so now we calculated this. OK, so this is this picture that I do. This is how the modes are. We calculated this on the Ising model. But what we did is we actually restricted to the even sector. Because if we don't restrict to the even sector, then we are getting this conditional mutual information decaying as 1 over n, and not which is a trivial decay of a trivial protection in a way. So let me briefly do this digression. Why 1 over n is a trivial protection? If I have a logical qubit, and I can send it to n different places and in physical qubits, I can decide to send it somewhere at random. And then if I lose one qubit, I will lose it with probability 1 over n. So this average reconstruction fidelity that I get will be 1 minus 1 over n. But we want to get something non-trivial, something better than that. And this is why we started looking at this even parity. And there's also a physical motivation for that, which is that the kind of noise that we expect in our system is parity preserving. So the full system is composed of parity preserving terms. So they're fermions. You can't create an odd number of fermions. And in order to give this recovery map the information that that the noise is not actually arbitrary noise, but it's some parity preserving noise, one thing that one can do is actually impose the global parity initially. And then when you have some noise, you just measure it, and you undo it if you change the parity. So yeah, that's the physical motivation. And OK, so because we have to impose this parity constraint, we really can't go to the thousands or hundreds that we were expecting. We can only do exact diagonalization and entropy calculations on the full density matrix. So in this plot is this beta proportional to n. So there, one. So there one was expecting the global entropy to be constant, and indeed looks like it's pretty flat, more or less. And these blue dots and red dots and green dots are experimental data for this conditional mutual information, this quantity that we wanted to be small. Blue is if we delete one qubit, so C has size 1, then it goes down quadratically. These red lines are quadratic fits to the line. And this green line is a quadratic decay. So this is a log-log plot. And this slope corresponds to a quadratic decay, the slope of the green line. And the slope of the blue dashed line corresponds to a linear decay. So it's clearly, I'm pretty convinced that in this case it's decaying quadratically, this conditional mutual information. So yeah, the pitfall is that for this such a small system, we have of the order of one bit of entropy that is being preserved. But this 0.02, this is pretty good. And if one wants to encode more information, well, what one would do is take the temperature to zero more slowly, or make beta grow more slowly. And then indeed, the amount of information, so the SBC is the thermal entropy, starts to grow. And the conditional mutual information is still decreasing, but now it's decreasing a bit more slowly. It's not, this is again, this this guy to the I is n to the 2/3, or 1. Yeah. No, sorry, this is 1 over n, 2 over n. And OK, so this was beta to the 2/3. And this last one was beta equals square root of n. And here you see that it just decays more slowly. So yeah. I think with that, it's essentially everything that I wanted to say. Yeah.
This title, larger black hole equal to more logical information. So how do you read it from here?
Well, that this line is going, is becoming larger. So it's not larger in absolute terms because with respect to the previous graph. So if you look at this line here, it's in units of entropy. And here we were reaching two, but this all depends on the constant that is in front of the scaling of beta. So here, the impression that one is supposed to get is that if I were to make the system larger and larger, then this would continue to go up. This is extrapolation.
Yes, but the region you're looking at is 1 qubit, 2 qubits, 3 qubits
mm-hmm.
in a growing system. So it's of a small fraction.
Correct. So okay, so maybe
you're making B arbitrarily.
Right. So maybe looking at this graph, so suppose I delete 1 qubit from 3, right? So this is this point here. Or I delete 2 qubits from 6. This is that point there. Or I delete 3 qubits from 9. And they're roughly in the same ballpark. So very roughly. And maybe this one is a bit better.
But would that be the question that we should be asking or not?
I think that would be the question that we should, that the quantity that will be invariant. If you take a certain fraction of the boundary CFT.
It can be small, but
it can be
constant is large and limit.
But constant size fraction, what is the approximation error you make? And I expect that in some limit, this in the field theory limit, this approximation error will only depend on the fraction.
And your results are compatible with that, roughly speaking, qualitatively.
Well, in this case, yes, because this is a case where I'm keeping this center of the same size.
Can I just say, it looks to me like this relation is just a consequence of factorization of correlation functions, not of holography. It doesn't, you don't need CFT or anything. So if you keep your C fixed, like
mm-hmm.
a finite number of spins,
mm-hmm.
and your B is larger and larger, that's how I understand it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then this SB is actually a three-point function, if you wish. Right? There's a one boundary or four-point function. One boundary there, two boundaries here, and one boundary there,
mm-hmm.
four-point function. And if these two fields become very far away from the fields that are in the middle, correlation function will factorize.
I see.
And it will be SB plus SC.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, and that's completely...
Yeah, this is precisely the regime that one wants to get at and prove.
Yeah.
I mean, if
this is a simple consequence of factorization of correlation function, at least in GFT. It's
mm-hmm.
completely obvious. Yeah. So and we could calculate the subleading, you know, the exponentially decaying subleading term. So you don't need a CFT. In QFT, one can show that using twist operator QFT. Even in quantum chain, there are twist operators as well, which are local and they are kind of strings, but they have certain locality properties. And one could probably prove this decay as well.
Are you talking about finite temperature as well? Or downstate?
Finite temperature, certainly you have exponentially decaying, even at zero temperature. At criticality or off criticality, you can have this decaying. If it's off criticality, we can characterize the decaying, it's going to be exponential. At criticality, then I wouldn't know how to characterize the decaying, but fine temperature, at criticality, certainly it will be decaying as well, yeah.
This is almost zero temperature,
but still there's factorization in CFT, it's just the decay is probably a power that decays.
So you can analytically characterize
it. Yeah. So that thing has nothing to do with holography.
So I agree that... So one thing that you require is factorization of correlation functions.
Yeah.
But depending on the size of your region, you could construct more and more complicated operators that try to recover more and more of the little correlations that there are. I mean, you'll have some exponential decay in terms of the length of the correlation function, but then you have you'll have some more possibly more complicated operators that live in that region that allow you to build correlations. So this is something that the only way I know how to exclude them is by looking at these entropies.
No, but you are referring to the fact that the entropies themselves can be understood as expected as operators.
Yeah. Expectation value of twist operator. So this SB is an expectation value, but it's an entity constellation of the expectation value, right? And so these expectation values, you can analyze them using QFT principles, and you would find that this kind of decay. So this relation SB equals SC plus BC is really a factorization of correlation function of local operators. These are the twist field operators that you use to characterize entanglement entropy.
It's a particular kind of field.
You have an analytical description of the corrections to factorization.
I think one can get, we haven't calculated that, but it's using the form factor program that I just described in my talk, you said that you can get these corrections.
Yeah. At least at zero temperature for now?
At least at zero temperature, and GFT, so one can control that.
Is it important that C is connected?
That C is connected. I mean, for all the reasoning, it's not important, but this can be in principle generic. So this was just to keep the drawing simple and the code simple. In principle, I was interested in some non-zero thermal entropy in order to say, okay, that there is some information being encoded there, but still you can recover it.
Okay, let's see.